Hello and welcome to the Around the Nation podcast for week two of the 2008 Division III football season. I'm Pat Coleman.
And I'm Keith McMillan.
And we're here to wrap up an interesting second week of Division III football. And let's kind of start right at the top, at least at the top of the upsets list in the top 25, Keith, where we start with Delaware Valley taking down Wesley on Saturday by the score of 25-22. This is a game that was close last year, too, at home at Wesley. This time Wesley has to go on the road and play on the grass at Delaware Valley, and Wesley never seems to do very well on grass anymore, do they?
Well, there's just so many things about this game that are interesting. Not just Wesley playing on grass, but not having a chance to open up last week against Christopher Newport because of the storm. You know, you wonder how they're going to perform in their first game. Are they going to be really fired up? And, you know, they obviously started off well, taking that 16-0 lead in the first half, but they weren't able to sustain it.
They got the big lead, then Delaware Valley kind of edged back into it, barely got into the end zone with under 20 seconds left to kind of seal that one off. And I think one of the most interesting things about this game, just from looking at the box score and talking to our guy Gordon Mann, who was there, was the fact that Jason Schatz, who made the kind of much ballyhooed transition from wide receiver to starting quarterback last year for Wesley, was pulled in the middle of the game.
Yeah, and they went to another quarterback, Shane McSweeney, who came in, was 3 for 5, and threw a touchdown pass in the fourth quarter that gave him a lead. But it wasn't much of a passing day for Wesley with either quarterback in the game. Only 8 completions, I believe 81 yards. And certainly you got to give credit, I think, in this case, to the Delaware Valley defense.
And Delaware Valley improves to 1-1. They lost to Iona, a 1AA non-scholarship team. That's a team, you know, remember, 1AA non-scholarship is not that different than Division III. And, you know, I know from, in Iona's case, they don't even really have good facilities to speak of. Sometimes those Division I AA schools have some pretty decent facilities or good workout places. I know that Iona is pretty much at the bottom of Division I in the, you know, kind of in the basketball lexicon, too. So there's not much separating them from the typical Division III school. There were also 3 games between teams, or between 2 teams that were in the top 25. One of them, of course, was Bethel against Wheaton, and Wheaton making its debut for this season, and Bethel playing its second game, but still had a lot of questions about them.
Well, yeah, not only just because they don't have the offensive firepower team that they had last season, but it's so hard to judge a game where it was played in, you know, not just a driving rain, but it started raining the night before and it rained continuously. You know, they had trouble, both teams had trouble kicking field goals in the game. I think 1 field goal was made in 5 attempts. And, you know, those two teams were going to be evenly matched up because, you know, Bethel, Wheaton, pretty consistently good every year. But it's so difficult to take away a whole lot from a game that's played in conditions like that.
Pete Intersagan, the All-American return man and cornerback, did get his hands on the football. Now, I know, Keith, you know, as a defensive back, it's possible to throw away from a defender and try to avoid him in the passing game. But what do you lose in the kicking game if you intentionally try to punt away from the punt return man who is the only man back there? What's the cost there?
Well, you know, especially in the weather like that, teams try to play a field position game. If they know they're not going to have a big day offensively, you know, if you can get a couple first downs on a drive and you can't move it, a lot of times teams are content to punt it, you know, from their own 50 and try to bury a team. And so when you kick away from a guy like Intersagan, you know, that a lot of times that's what they're trying to do in terms of, you know, just winning the field position battle. And whenever he can get his hands on the ball, you know, in Wheaton's case, to have one of your most talented players on defense, you know, they want to find, they can't afford to not have him on defense because he's such a lockdown corner for them, but they want to find ways to get the ball in his hands, and having him in the punt return, kick return game has worked out great for them.
And in the case of Wheaton on Saturday, it was their only touchdown of the afternoon, a 65-yard punt return by Intersagan, and they eventually went on to beat Bethel 10-7. Now, as you and I know, it's just about 8 miles down the road to Naperville, where North Central hosted Ohio Northern.
And that was one that, you know, really had a lot of eyes on it because North Central, one of the top teams in the CCIW, and ONU, one of those teams right behind Mount Union in the OAC. So we wanted to see what kind of implications this was going to have for down the line. You know, it's only week two, but we're already looking at this game as a game that could affect the North Region playoff picture.
Now, I know for North Central coming into the season, you know, quarterback is back. Running back is back. They graduated some guys off their offensive line, and then they had an injury on the offensive line during preseason camp. So it seemed like, I think, like the offense was maybe one of the questions coming into the afternoon, and it took them a little while to get kind of get it going. But I think in the second half, it's some good signs for North Central fans.
Well, I mean, they finished with 278 yards of offense, and a lot of that came in the second half. I thought in that game, the thing that stood out was holding Ohio Northern to 183 yards. And also, you know, they had, Ohio Northern fumbled five times and lost four of those. So anytime you turn the ball over that many times, it's going to be a tough day for them.
And North Central held onto the ball for 37 minutes, had a couple of big drives, long drives that consumed most of the third quarter. Ended up only in field goals, but it was enough to hold on for the 20-3 win. The third game between top 25 teams also played in the rain, and that was one of the ones I was at, as Wisconsin-Whitewater went to Wisconsin-Eau Claire and kind of escaped, I think is the right word, with a 16-14 win. Whitewater had, you know, struggled a little bit in the red zone. They overthrew a wide-open receiver in the first quarter, had a couple of drop passes in the red zone in the second quarter, ended up settling for short Jeff Shebler field goals, and then had a drive that got all the way down to about the Eau Claire 10, and then in the three-play series got the line of scrimmage pushed all the way back to the 30-yard line. Jeff Shebler comes out and kicks a 47-yard field goal in the rain, and here's what Jeff had to say about that.
I don't know what happened. My holder held it. As soon as I kicked, I go, oh, no. My holder's like, oh, it's in. We were talking the whole way. We don't know. But it went in. Ref came up to me after the game. It's like, barely went in. I go, hey, it went in.
Shebler with the three field goals, but Lavelle Coppage with 220 yards and a touchdown on 42 carries. Those are numbers that sound awfully familiar for a Whitewater running back, don't they, Keith?
And that's what stood out from somebody not being at the game, like I wasn't. You know, just to see another back step into that Justin Beaver role so quickly. Not just Justin Beaver gone, but remember last year they had four seniors on that offensive line. So many guys in the running game, you know, to be replaced, and to see that manifest itself really in the second week out, just after that St. Xavier game last week. You know, they I think were a little shaky on offense, if I remember correctly. And then this week to come out and have a young guy rush for more than 200 yards it just bodes really well for them. And also for them in this conference picture to have maybe the toughest team in the WIAC up first, and to be able to eke out that victory really does bode well for the Warhawks.
Warhawks have a bye this week, then they go out to Puget Sound and come back home to face Wisconsin Lacrosse. We'll touch on Wisconsin Lacrosse in a little bit, but on the Eau Claire side, you know, the offense has been kind of their struggle over the past, certainly last year. They went through a bunch of quarterbacks after Kyle Paulson got injured. They ended up having to start a wide receiver at quarterback in a second round playoff game. You know, Paulson's back and he looked all right. He was 14-30 with 131 yards at, Corey Sartorelli in the running game for them at 24 carries for 112 yards and a touchdown. And I think Eau Claire may still end up being the number two team in this conference. I just don't know what to make of lacrosse after 2 weeks, Keith.
Yeah, well, I mean, and you could almost throw, I don't want to say you could throw out the North Dakota game, but it's so hard to take a lot away from, you know, a team with 59 scholarships going against lacrosse. We know they did it a couple years ago. They beat South Dakota State when they were in that same transition period from division two to football championship subdivision. We'll just call it 1AA. I don't think anybody will mind. And, you know, there's an opportunity there for lacrosse, but, you know, when they come back to the WIAC, how much does that loss mean? I think the thing that really hurt them was that first week, not being able to close out the game against Hardin-Simmons, knowing they had this game coming up next. That's almost like not a throw, but it was just such a tough game for them to try and win. And now they're at that 0-2. And you mentioned it last week in the podcast, Pat, 0-5 is not out of the realm of possibility here. They have to really get themselves together quickly.
Let's talk about Hardin-Simmons for a second. They get the big come-from-behind win last week against lacrosse. Then they go home, and they hold off Linfield 29-22. It looks like they're in pretty good shape right now.
We thought, you can tell when we saw them play last year, you know, against Linfield, it wasn't like they were blown off the field. I saw them play again in the second half against Mary Hardin-Baylor, and they just couldn't keep up defensively. And, you know, we talked a little bit last week in the podcast about what they did defensively to try to, You know, they weren't going to scrap the whole scheme or get rid of bringing a whole bunch of new players. And they were just refining things and, coming up with some new ideas, but kind of sticking with the same kids. And I think I felt like going into this year, Pat, and I think you felt this way too. If they could just be better defensively, they didn't have to be a kind of a team that was going to shut teams out, but they have so much talent on offense with Justin Feaster developing over last year and Michael Carrillo at the wide receiver spot. And, they always are able to run the ball well, that they're going to be a formidable team to deal with if they could just be functional defensively.
On the Linfield side of the ball, I know that the Wildcats lost their starting quarterback during the game and they're finished the game with their backup starter. Sounds like, from all reports, a broken collarbone, so that's doesn't bode well for Linfield this year. But again, we talk about Hardin-Simmons. They've won two non-conference games, which is good. It puts them in good position for an at-large bid if they don't beat Mary Hardin-Baylor and run the table in the conference. Then again, if you're Linfield, you get a couple days to lick your wounds, but for the first time, of course, in the Northwest Conference, they have an automatic bid to shoot for.
And what a shame for Linfield to not have one of their best, one of their more dominant teams in a year when they first have that automatic qualifier. I think it's going to be a real interesting year in the Northwest Conference because you have Linfield, still being competitive. You have Willamette off to a good start. And then Whitworth, you don't know exactly what you're going to get from them, but they haven't looked bad so far either.
Yeah, I think that conference is really up for grabs. Nobody really, neither of the two top teams really returns a bunch of stuff from last year. Pacific Lutheran went 7-2 last year, but they graduated almost everybody. I think they just had four starters back. And Willamette has certainly shown itself strong in the early going, and I think we'll talk a little bit more about that later as well. One of the other upsets in the top 25 on Saturday was Wartburg going up to Augsburg and falling in double overtime, 30-24. Wartburg and Augsburg have played some pretty good games over the last 5 years. I think four times in the last 5 years it's come down to just a couple of points. And, I kind of thought Keith Wartburg had a bit of the upper hand just because of the revenge factor. I had to think Wartburg must have been pretty angry at the way they were left out of the NCAA playoffs last year, and they had to really point at that loss to Augsburg in the middle of the season.
And that, says a lot about where they are right now, with not being able to take advantage of that sort of mental advantage they might have had and to be able to use that in that game to pull it out. Now, Augsburg was one of the teams that finished last season very strongly. And, offensively, I think they're starting to get it figured out. So, that just makes the MIAC more dangerous this year because you always have St. John's and Bethel there at the top. St. Olaf, as we've seen, they were off to a pretty good start. They're not completely finished yet just because they lost their head coach and, so-called offensive guru. And you really have, Concordia Moorhead, I think, also is another team that had the tough loss in week one, bounced back well this week, and had a lot of starters back and has been pretty effective in the running game. Offensively last year, I think they were the number 13 offense in the country. So you got a lot coming out of that conference, and that's going to be a real fun race to watch.
For Augsburg, one of the interesting things last night was, first of all, of course, they came out in the spread and they ran, or of course, they didn't run in the spread. They threw exclusively for about the first 16 plays or so. Jordan Berg kind of tailed off a little bit in the second and third quarters, came on strong back again in the fourth, and overtimes finished 34-57 for 265 yards and three touchdowns. Royce Winford with eight catches for 87 yards and two scores, but I think it was really his play on defense, and we hear him talk about this after the game.
We lost one of our corners early in the year, so, coach asked me if I'd be able to do double time for him. I said I'd do it, I'll do whatever it takes to help the team, My first goal is on offense, obviously, but, yeah. Tonight, defense, they needed me, so I do like playing defense, though.
I shouldn't overlook, of course, Munir Al-Hamid, 14 catches for 95 yards and a touchdown. For Augsburg, the short passing game is really a replacement for the running game. They carried the ball 25 times for 89 yards, but remember this game did go to double overtime, so they had a couple of extra possessions to work with there. Wartburg, they looked good in spots. Spencer Herzberg was just one of four on field goals. However, he missed wide left in overtime. In the second overtime, he had a long kick blocked at the end of regulation. I don't think he had too much of a shot there. Did make from 40 yards, so he ends up right now he's the school's all-time leading field goal kicker. But Wartburg, they don't have a whole lot of time to rest, and that's not the word I'm looking for. More like lick their wounds, because they got to play at Central on Saturday.
And that's a game that is always a big factor in the Iowa intercollegiate athletic conference race. For some reason, I decided to pronounce that one all the way out. But it's always a huge game in that race. And, you know, to have it right on the back of a loss, I think you can look, you can take it two ways. And my guess is the way Wartburg will take it is they'll go right back to work on Monday. No loss of focus from these kids. And you can almost, it almost helps you forget this loss more quickly because you know you got to get refocused again for probably maybe your biggest game of the conference schedule.
I don't want to overlook a game that happened on Friday night. I was really impressed with how Mary Hart and Baylor came out of the gate. They just seemed to have almost none of the advantages in playing Southern Nazarene in the opener. They had the home field advantage. They didn't have their starting quarterback. They were facing a team that was in the NAIA playoffs last year and a team that was playing its third game. Mary Hart and Baylor, you know, graduated, you know, basically everything off the offensive line, graduated their 4 year starting quarterback and ended up winning that game 30-7.
They weren't able to play the guy that they elevated to starter this year because he's on a 1 week suspension. And yeah, you don't quite know what you get that first week when you play a ranked team from the NAIA. You know, sometimes those teams are pretty strong teams, sometimes not as much. And with so much in doubt for Mary Hart and Baylor, you know, that was a very encouraging result to see, you know, from afar, to see that they're basically not going to be a whole lot different than they were last season, which was pretty dominant.
Yeah, I think there were some other interesting, really bizarre results. When, for example, Keith, I know early on I saw that Shenandoah was beating Bridgewater, and I didn't foresee that lasting, but, you know, come the final gun, they won that game 10-6.
Yeah, and, you know, the way I was trying to explain it yesterday is that I'm sitting next to people at my day job, and they're saying, what's wrong with UCLA? What's wrong with Rutgers? What's wrong with Syracuse? And for us in the D3 world, we look at some of the scores, and we say, what's happening with Bridgewater? You know, what's happening with Mississippi College? What's happening with Randolph-Macon? Why are these teams that we thought were going to start off 2-0 or 1-0 now struggling? And that's sort of, you know, to use that same cliche, that's why they play the games. But you can't really assume anything in the beginning of the season. There's so many teams in Division III and so much turnover, obviously, every year in college that, you know, you think you can slot those same playoff teams in and the same top 25 from last year. But once the games get underway, you know, that's sort of the fun of watching what's going to happen where and where the upsets are going to be.
Yeah, there's some really surprising 2-0 teams right now, Keith. I think you mentioned Willamette earlier. They beat Concordia Moorhead in the opener. They beat Cal Lutheran. You know, those are two teams that have been in contention in their conferences, been in contention for playoff bids anyway. They're not the only interesting 2-0 teams out there so far, though.
No, I was definitely impressed with Willamette because of the quality of competition they played. But also you have Johns Hopkins, who had so many close losses last year, you know, able to pull that game out yesterday, 39-31, triple overtime against Randolph-Macon. St. Olaf, again, you know, we mentioned that they lost Chris Might, the offensive coach. He's now a quarterback's coach with the Redskins. And he was, you know, he'd always been sort of the offensive mastermind there. And they didn't score a whole lot of points yesterday, but clearly the wheels haven't fallen entirely off yet. Aurora, interesting win against Lake Forest. And they have McMurray coming up this week. A couple other 2-0 teams that, you know, we maybe didn't slot at 2-0. We didn't expect to see that record early on. Becker, Catholic, Lebanon Valley, and MIT.
MIT especially. MIT beat Maine Maritime in the first week. And to be honest with you, you know, after that, MIT, you know, beating Mass Maritime here in week two is not that big a surprise. But just, you know, kind of looking back at MIT at their recent history, they're 2-0 now. They won two games last year, two games the year before, two games in 2004. They did win three games in 05 and 03, but this is kind of a high watermark for MIT. And we just kind of wanted to spotlight the engineers. Also, you know, a spotlight out to St. Vincent, which won for the first time since they revived their football program. They beat Gallaudet 23-22. And, you know, again, you know, kind of just an interesting week two of football before we look ahead at week three, Keith.
Well, yeah, I got a couple more interesting things that sort of scores that just jumped off the page when you were going down the scoreboard page on Sunday. Carthage just started off 1-0, but scored 70 points to beat Hope 70-46. And you look at a score like that and you wonder, wow, they scored 70 points. I think their quarterback threw six touchdown passes. Or are you concerned about the defense? They gave up 46 points. You know, that'll be something to keep an eye on as they get into their CCIW schedule. And then, another, you know, couple of interesting results. You mentioned the St. Vincent one. And then, of course, that rivalry game between, Merchant Marine and Coast Guard, 34-7. For a team that was 1-9 last year, a pretty big win for Merchant Marine.
Yeah, I think that in the grand scheme of things, just kind of looking at where Merchant Marine is and looking at where Coast Guard is, I know they've been in different conferences for the past 2 years. Merchant Marine has struggled like the Dickens in the Liberty League, and Coast Guard has almost nearly wiped the walls with the NEFC. And I just think these two programs are really, right next to each other, and there's not that much difference between them at all.
Well, and until you see a 34-7 final, and kind of got to look at the details of that game to see why it was such a big blowout. But you know, those two teams always get up big for that game. You know, a couple other week two results that were interesting: the Westminster, Pennsylvania 6-2 win against Allegheny. Another, you know, the weather was, I think, a factor pretty much from Texas, and there was sort of a big swath of rain all across the Midwest, and it obviously made it all the way out to that middle of Pennsylvania there, the western half of Pennsylvania. That game was scoreless through 53 minutes, and it ended up being 6-2 in favor of the Titans. And another result that caught my eye from Michigan was Kalamazoo getting a win, beating Rockford 17-14. That's a program that's sort of been in upheaval for the past couple of years, and you know, right there on the list with those teams that haven't won a whole lot. And we've seen now in the first 2 weeks, a lot of those teams get a chance to experience victory.
Our weekly Augustana watch, they were 15 of 18 passing for 135 yards as they turned to convert to the spread offense. And as we kind of heard from people on the scenes last week, they were spread out on the field, but still running the ball. And last week, against Greenville, 289 yards rushing and 160 yards passing, as they won that game 30-0.
And, you know, that's, if you take Augustana and Augsburg, you know, two teams that are both running the spread offense, they're sort of at both ends of the spectrum of ways you can employ that offense. You know, spread really doesn't mean necessarily you have to throw the ball. It just means you're going to spread the field. Augustana is using it to create running lanes, and Augsburg, obviously, you know, no problem throwing the ball 50, 60 times a game. So, you know, they're using it, you know, for a different reason.
Looking ahead to week three, we got Wesley trying to get back on the winning side. They host Widener, and, you know, Widener had an interesting low-scoring win. We mentioned Hope. They gave up 70 points. Now they go to Wisconsin-Eau Claire, which only scored 14 and gave up 16. Mountain Union-Ohio Northern, a great OAC game right out of the gate. I know that... You know, I know that there's a lot of great games in the OAC because there's just a lot of good teams, and it seems like there's one of them every week, Keith.
Yeah, and it might be like that this year, at least until we get some separation, because you have maybe six teams where you can envision seven or eight wins, you know, depending on if a team like maybe Heidelberg takes a step forward. And they host Capital this week, so that's maybe possibly another big game, you know, depending on how that works out. And then, you know, another conference that has a couple of big games we talked about earlier, the IIAC, the IAC. I don't know. We don't have a good sounding acronym for that one. But Wartburg goes to Central, and then Co at Cornell, which, you know, not as necessarily as big a game in the standings, but always a big rivalry game. And now that's, you know, add that with the Coast Guard Merchant Marine game. That's two rivalry games that have come up in the schedule pretty early in the season this year. A couple other games that could be big as conference play gets underway. You know, another one in the OAC actually that could be big is John Carroll and Baldwin Wallace.
I think you put Mount Union at the top, and then I think there's five teams that you could, you know, conceivably think of getting that number two spot.
And that's what's, you know, that's what makes it so fun to watch, and that's what makes the pool system. You know, you have the automatic qualifier, and every team knows what they have to do to get a bid. But then, you know, there's a handful of other bids where if you finish second and you lose that one big game, your season's not shot. And we've seen many a time, you know, most notably in 99, 2000, 2004, team have really great playoff runs. A team that didn't win its conference, you know, make it all the way to the Stag Bowl.
Christopher Newport is going to face Salisbury. It's another game to look at. And you know, if you're Christopher Newport starting your season on September 20th, I guess, to be honest with you, starting September 20th against Salisbury is probably not that much different than starting September 6th against Wesley.
Yeah, if you think about it, it really isn't a whole lot different for them. You know, they have a tough challenge off the bat, but they like to do that. If you talk to Matt Kelchner, he says that his kids, you know, they come to school and they want to play in big games. And, you know, you're going to have a couple of big games in your conference picture every year, but he wants to add a couple at the beginning of the season. And they may have been maybe the most effective team nationally in playing difficult games early in their schedule to get them ready for a conference schedule that turns out to be not as difficult.
And, of course, week three is when the NESCAC gets underway. Wesleyan is at Tufts, Bowdoin at Middlebury, Hamilton at Amherst, Colby at Williams, and Bates at Trinity, Connecticut. So none of the big marquee matchups in that league coming out right out of the gate. That is our Around the Nation podcast for week three. He's Keith McMillan, and I'm Pat Coleman, and you can see more from Around the Nation in Keith McMillan's column coming up a little bit later this week.